power of Grayskull.
Welcome to Nerd, a podcast where we geek out on a different nerdy subject every month. It's one part reminiscence, one part historical deep dive, all nerd. Today's subject, He-Man and She-Ra, a Christmas special. Joining a Muppet Family Christmas, we cap off the holiday season looking at another crossover Christmas special from our childhood. We also go over the history and business motivations behind He-Man, which might explain why the plot, which we also go over in depth, isn't super strong. So pull out your swords and bellow to the heavens. It's time for another episode of Nerd.
Hey, nerds. Welcome to another episode of Nerd with Dre and Jeff. I am Jeff, which means?
I'm the She-Ra to your He-Man, Dre Alvarez. Well, I don't know if I'm going to keep that in, Jeff. That's weird.
My twin sister, Dre, everybody.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it works, I guess. It works for this point. Yes. We are doing a very special episode of Nerd. If you are listening to this upon release, that means that you're a subscriber at patreon.com/Jeff May. And if you're listening to this for free, there's some time capsule energy to that because we aren't going to release this. We are holding it hostage. So He-Man was a property that I know I not only grew up loving, but I have maintained a love from that with the full understanding that this is not a good show. I love He-Man, Masters of the Universe. I have been both an attendee at PowerCon and I have gone as an employee for Tweeterhead because we had worked on Masters of the Universe properties. I very much love Masters of the Universe, as you can tell by my garb.
The old school. I know we're definitely going to be talking about some of the different iterations of, because He-Man is just fascinating.
There's
in
a
regards
whole lot of,
to
yeah.
everything.
There's a lot of He-Man to talk about too, and so the holiday special is, well, they call it straight up Christmas. Like they're very they do an interesting job of this. This Christmas special is sort of used to make sure that they bridge He-Man and She-Ra to boost the visibility of both characters. While having a nice little special event.
Yeah, I definitely dug it. And yeah, so do we want to, so last time I thought we were going to do a quick synopsis of the Muppet Family. That was the whole show and that's more than fine. And that might happen here. So let's just start talking about it. If you have not seen He-Man and She-Ra, a Christmas special, here's the thing, Jeff, I liked it. I really liked it.
Yeah.
But I'll give a bit of a caveat. I'm a parent at this point. And so what happened is we went on a road trip. We did a Jeff road trip because I went and saw a Christmas market in Chicago, as did, I think, everybody. It was so packed. It was an outdoor market that had like no walking space. It was ridiculous. And then I also went and saw Christmas Zoo Lights. So I had a very Christmas themed weekend. And then we were in a hotel. I didn't have access to a lot of stuff. And so basically I just watched He-Man and She-Ra after like the kiddo went to sleep. I watched it on my phone. That was kind of it. I was kind of focused, you know, nothing else. If I'm like at home, there's always the, oh, I should be doing this. So I should be doing that. Well, you're at a hotel. You can't do anything else. So I kind of watched it. There were some good parts. We'll talk about the good parts. There were some enjoyable parts. So I think I really enjoyed it, but I can also recognize that the enjoyment might just come from being a parent that like had this brief window to just like sit and relax. And so I might be elevating.
You might have enjoyed not having to deal with your kid while watching a children's show.
I'll say it this way. I love my kid, and that's not even the issue. Like he goes to sleep.
Yeah,
but you might understand this being another, I know you work from home as well, right? I think you and I both have our offices and even recording spaces set up at home, is that when you work from home, it makes a very, very weird environment for you because you're always by work.
Yeah.
And so even if you're like, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to relax and I'm going to enjoy, you know, a movie. Well, work's right next to you or something might ding, right? That might even happen now while we're talking. So, you know, one of us might get a message from somebody else. It's like, oh, I got to check in on work. So this was a case where like I got to sit down and I didn't get interrupted by work or even reminder of work.
Oh, that's got to feel good, huh?
Yeah. And so like I really enjoyed it, but I guess I should stress ahead of time when I'm like, I really like this, Jeff. You're like, really? You like Beast Monster? I'm like, I did, Jeff. I did like Beast Monster.
Okay, let me tell you, we're going to talk about when we get to the Beast Monster part, I am going like we'll just tell you that there are several parts where I rewound and watched again just to laugh my ass off. And that is absolutely one of them. So we see that, you know, the history of this is very interesting in that it is a very famous Christmas special. It's actually been memed as well. The I am not nice. you know,
that is the best. We will get there. But Skeletor MVP, no questions. He is the MVP of this Christmas.
Yeah, special. Skeletor knocks it out of the park. You know, I see a lot of like art about it. I know Dave Perillo did a fantastic print of the He-Man and She-Ra Christmas special, and I've actually purchased it and given it away as a Christmas gift to a friend, because it was just such a beautiful piece. There's like this soft spot for He-Man that has sort of lasted, I think, longer and better than most 80s properties, aside from like maybe Transformers. He-Man really has sort of maintained its grip, and it is not a good show.
Well, I think what I would argue is He-Man as a show in some parts is very last. He-Man itself is last minute. And what was kind of funny is I ended up watching like an hour and a half documentary on it just for fun.
The Power of Grayskull one?
Yeah, the definitive history of the Power of Grayskull. It was an excellent one. And, you know, the guy was kind of talking where it's like a lot of He-Man is first drafts that they're like, surely we will change that.
It's like, no.
It's like, why is this castle called? This was in that documentary. He says, why is that castle called Grayskull? He's like, oh, well, the guy's name was Gray and skulls are cool.
You're it's a lot of Mark Taylor doing a lot of heavy lifting to save a dying toy company. And it's very fascinating to see that they reinjected a lot of strength into Mattel after they really blew it during the Star Wars run.
Although let's give some fairness there. Same documentary brings this up. So for those that don't know, the background you're talking about is what happened with Mattel is George Lucas approached them and said, do you want to make the toys? And there were two issues with that. The first is they had been burned by movies before.
Didn't sell back then. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't even just that they didn't sell. It was that you got a toy out for a movie. It takes a while to make a toy. So you get it out for the movie. The movie leaves the theaters. People miss that the home video market wasn't even a thing yet.
There was no home video, and that's very important to remember that if you wanted to re-see a movie, you had to wait for it to be re-released in the theater
or come out on TV, and then that's just luck of the draw there.
Yeah.
And then additionally, it takes a long time. So Kenner, the brand that did pick up the Star Wars toys, they came out and said, we're releasing Star Wars toys, and everybody wants them because Star Wars was that big. They gave him a coupon. So on the one hand, it's easy for Mattel to say, I can't believe we missed this. On the other hand, I'm like, that was just bad luck. Like, no, that wasn't a bad business call. That was you thinking about buying a lottery ticket and then not. And then it turns out your numbers would have won that day.
Yeah. I mean, kind of, I guess. Yeah. It shows a lack of forethought. And I understand, like, you don't want to bankrupt your company by making a terrible toy line. But at the same time, if they had any access to Star Wars information, they would have been like, yeah, this is looks pretty,
maybe. I mean, it's worth noting cool. As an example, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg had like a bet about whose gross was going to do better.
Yeah, they each traded points on Close Encounters and Star Wars. And Spielberg made way more money off of his points.
Exactly. Then additionally, there were people working on it, like, you know, Mark Hamill's working on it and going, hey, this looks like a flop. Like, it wasn't known. So, I mean, I do want to be really careful there about saying, but that's what happened. That was the impetus, is they had just missed a big property and they're like, it's not happening again. They had the opportunity to pick up Conan. They went, Conan's R-rated. We can't do that. And then they basically threw together a really cool toy line that merged basically Conan the Barbarian and Space, because Space was really popular. And it worked out miraculously.
It's important to remember, too, that a lot of the history of He-Man is based entirely on deregulation of the airwaves by really the Reagan administration, deregulating the airwaves so that you no longer had to follow the no 30-minute toy commercials rule. And so that's why you saw such a proliferation of action-oriented cartoons in the 80s as opposed to the 70s, which you did not. There was no educational element. The educational element was sort of broken down to PSAs, which is why we are now we have so many, you know, we talked a lot about Christmas today, but what's really important is the people around you. Like, they would add a PSA at the end of these sort of not violent, but violent cartoons. And that was enough that they could then sell their toys. So the history of He-Man is very interesting, very based in that of, we need to make a cartoon to sell toys.
And that on that front, that would be part of the story behind this Christmas special, and what I would argue part of its biggest, like if we were saying like if it's good or bad, I think there are some really good elements in it, and then it's also got some bad parts. And the bad parts really come about from this Christmas special was supposed to be the handoff from He-Man to She-Ra.
I mean, it really is. It's a push for both, because if you look at the characters that they truly do utilize, especially there, and it tends to be more She-Ra specific, introducing characters that, you know, giving speaking roles to the new toys that were coming out, basically. And that's not the worst idea.
Yeah, this, I was going to say, did you notice the sorceress was completely absent this one? I was.
Well, yeah,
was...
because they couldn't. The sorceress is like kind of imprisoned in Grayskull. And they didn't go to Grayskull. They stayed at the palace in Eternia. So there's
no cutaway. She could have been watching. I don't know.
It's just all sad. Nobody visiting her on Christmas. But it is like they definitely do. There are scenes where you can see like all, you know, I think Marlena and She-Ra and Teela all together. You know, like there's a lot of the characters that are, you know, they mix the characters very well, I think. But yes, this is a toy commercial.
And that was the thinking is He-Man. So what they did is old school days before home video and stuff, they would have syndication. You'd want to get enough of a bank of episodes to just be able to run on television indefinitely. And they were done.
100 episodes.
Yeah, they had over that for He-Man, right? Over 100 episodes. They have over 100 episodes of He-Man. They're spinning off. They're making She-Ra as a spinoff because they're basically saying we're going to try and reach the girl market of this toy thing. And I mean, I think the
famously
hilarity...
developed by, do you know who was one of the main writers?
J. Michael Straczynski.
Of Babylon 5 creator and Spider-Man marriage eraser, J. Michael Straczynski. Yeah.
He's talked about the marriage eraser. We don't have time to go down, but I think like he was
Joe Quesada made him do it. He did the best he could with what his boss told him he had to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I do find it, I find this to be a very interesting choice. It is a weird as hell. It's weird. This is just a weird. It's weird, and not necessarily in a terrible way, but it's just weird.
Well, let's get into it. And I'll say is I think like a lot of He-Man. I think there is a good Christmas special in there, and it reminded me a lot of the Muppet Christmas special because this is a crossover. But the failure is the Muppet Christmas special is we've got these cool toys. Let's see how they would play together, and you've got amazing writers that figured it out. And the He-Man one, and this was a lot of problem with the brand because it eventually did crashes. Instead of going, how do we make these cool toys play together? Because it is cool. And that does happen a little. They said, how do we sell new toys? So that's why they're really promoting the She-Ra brand and introducing weird characters that you can tell they're like, we're going to make a robot toy at some point. The Mandroids or whatever. We'll talk about that.
Well, there was also Multibot. They had Multibot in there too. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't even
about.
Remember. We're going to have to, when we get there, you have to remind me. Okay.
All right.
So, intro is really cool, and this is like where it could have been good. Is the intro is the He-Man theme is playing, and did you notice this, Jeff? Am I wrong? I caught three themes in there. It was the He-Man theme, it was Happy Birthday, and it was like a holiday. And the reason being,
kind of piece that together, but I wasn't listening for it. One of the things about He-Man is I actually really like, for some reason, they're like repetitive video game music during the course of the episodes. It's very like kind of like burp 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 burp. Like, I actually really like that. And that's oddly one of the more nostalgic things to me is whenever a monster roars or you hear that background episode or hearing He-Man yell, I have the power.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what I'm going to give it actually is one of the good parts about He-Man is the music. It's got amazing music. I'll say that. And some of that is really iconic. And so that's what I was saying. I was like, we talked a lot about music on last show because it was music centric. When I heard that, I was like, this is a really good music theme. You know what? If you want to do a lot of interstitials of classic music melodies mixed with the He-Man theme, I think that would go really well together. And nope, that doesn't happen, Jeff. We'll get to some more. But that's the start. It was really good.
Yeah.
Now we get one of the first memes that I don't know if it's a meme, but a repetitive thing that happens in the show, which is bringing up Christmas and immediately just cutting the scene. So what happens is they're preparing for Adam and Adora's birthday. So for those that don't know, that's He-Man and She-Ra. That's their alter egos, their twin brother and sister, who oddly enough, whenever He-Man and She-Ra are in the same place, they're in the same place. No one pieces it together. There you go. So Princess Adora is like, I'm going to leave the Civil War, which is the big issue in her thing. She's like, I can just leave that war and bring the entire army to Eternia. It's no problem. It's no big deal. I'll just
leave
that.
They need a break.
Yeah. She says, well, come to Eternia and they're going to celebrate their birthday together. And it turns out, oh, their birthday is like 2 days before Christmas. So while they're setting up the birthday, like, I didn't realize this until reading up. Marlena is originally an astronaut.
And she landed and got some royal strange when she landed there. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have some questions about Earth and Royal Strange and all that. So Marlena just briefly mentions to King Randor, these are He-Man's parents. She's like, this reminds me of Christmas. And he's like, what's Christmas? She's like, a wonderful time. You're like, seems like a good time for an explanation. And
how long you guys been married? 20 years?
Yeah.
Never brought up Christmas, huh?
Well, it depends if they were married before having their two kids. I think they were, right? Because the backstory where the Sword of Power, where we find out She-Ra's origin story, they're king and queen at that point. So
yeah, the kids are 20. They turned 20 this episode.
Yep.
So, which is so weird to me because they didn't seem 20.
Yeah.
That's fine. You
know, there are many comments there. Yeah. But that's going on. We cut away and Prince Adam and Man-at-Arms are finishing up a drone satellite.
They're making a drone to spy on Skeletor.
It's really more of a rocket ship, and that's what I was going to say. So they're making a drone to spy on Skeletor called the Sky Spy, and they're back and forth. Oh, when this is up, we'll be able to spy on Skeletor, and
It'd be funny if it was branded Sky Spy, and then that thing crashed, and like, I don't know what you're talking about. That is just a weather balloon. It's a Sky Spy right on it.
Well, that gets huge. But anyway, Orko, I don't know. He sucks this episode.
Orko's a real piece of trash here because he basically just goes and hangs out in the Sky Spy and it takes off.
Well, he starts it basically, right? Like he hits it. The implication, that's a classic trope of like, don't press, what's that button do? The button that says lunch. No, it's launch. Not that campy, but Orko hears them talking about it. So he knows what it is. He goes up and gets into it and like has to really work to get into this, the spy satellite, which is really a rocket ship, but you know, whatever. Really has to works so hard he actually drops his spell book, gets in, and inadvertently sets it off. And what I think is really, really important, I put this in the notes, Jeff, is the entire thing that we have been set up with is this is a spy satellite set to spy on Skeletor. What would make a lot of sense to me from a narrative perspective is what if Orko gets trapped in Snake Mountain? He's undetected, so they can't see him, but he's trapped there because of the spy thing, and no one knows he's there, and what do? That would be a good start. Except, nope, immediately Skeletor looks up and goes, what is that? Let's go get it. So this thing that was designed to spy on Skeletor is immediately detected by Skeletor, who immediately wants to bring it down and take it back.
Not the most stealthy of the spies here. Yeah, it is very funny because, Skeletor's like, oh, shit, a sky spy. Like, let's get it. It immediately becomes this kind of chase. Where he grabs like the catcher thing, there's a lot of claws on a lot of dangly arms here.
So He-Man and She-Ra find out, and there's just like a running theme that I love this episode, which is as both Adam and Adora and He-Man and She-Ra, they're just like brother sister, brother sister, brother sister, back and forth.
They say it so much,
It's debating if I'm going to go blue with some jokes later about what this really feels a lot like. Anyway. That being said,
they definitely say brother and sister like it's porn. If that's what you're saying, like if they're trying to get
there's so many aspects of this in general, just the costumes, the outfits. I'm just like, this reminds me of something else. But anyway.
Yeah. So Skeletor, by the way, it's very funny. You'll notice that in the catcher, I forget what it's called, but his henchmen are Spikor, Too Bad, and Webstor, and they were, you know, Too Bad was a later run toy, so you can tell that they're not using those first run villains. You're not getting
you don't have
Trapjaw, Whiplash, Beastman. Yeah. No, it's they're going with the ones they want you to buy.
But He-Man and She-Ra also realize it. This was a fun note that showed up in the notes or the director's commentary. Is He-Man has like a little thing that he rides?
And go ahead.
I was going to say it is a land-based vehicle in the He-Man canon, but in this episode it can fly because She-Ra has a flying horse.
It's the laser bolt that he gets on, and that is a wheel-based thing. But they were like, "Well, we got to sell them more copies of the laser bolt." So
there you go. So He-Man and She-Ra fly after, and they take it down. And they're again, Skeletor is the MVP because they're like, oh no, they disabled the controls. This is going to fly back. Our, the collector, the big thing they're flying in, is going to fly back to Snake Mountain. And he's like hell it is. And he goes, here, get a parachute. And his henchmen go, we don't need a parachute. And he's like, yes, you do. And he just jumps out with them on a parachute. It's awesome. Skeletor, yeah. He is the man. I cannot express how much I love Skeletor.
Yeah.
This episode.
One of the things that's very funny is that they do not waste any time having Adam transform into He-Man. It is within the first 3 minutes, which is not normal. They don't normally have him activate it. He activates his power in the middle of like Man-at-Arms' lab. And like, remember, it's supposed to be a secret identity. So you can imagine all these people be like, hey, did lightning just strike the lab here?
Well, there was a, you know, we can't go without talking Cracked, especially since a lot of the people we like when it was in its heyday worked on the good stuff. And, you know, of course, you're a Batman guy. There was a great Batman sketch back in the day at Cracked where like everybody in Gotham knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman. And they just are like, he holds up our economy. They're like,
let this guy do it. Yeah.
Some like teenage girls discover that Bruce Wayne is Batman. And like, we know we're going to go tell the people. And they're like, you can't do that. They're like, we need this. This is you can't use taxes. Rich people won't pay taxes. The only way to get Bruce Wayne to spend money on Gotham is to dress up like a bat and pay for a bunch of police. So you're not telling anybody. And it seems the same in He-Man, She-Ra lore. It's like, it does seem like Randor, Marlena, everybody kind of knows, and just no one's saying anything.
Yeah. Well, it's like, we've seen you. So they get up there. One of the first things is that He-Man's actually incapacitated very early on this. He gets up on the collector, and they kind of wrap him up in these sort of coils. And that really is just an avenue for She-Ra to come in and free him. He drops his sword on this jet and it just stays put. And she whips her sword from like 100 yards out at her twin brother and just cuts it while it's moving. The sunny moving jet.
Yeah, She-Ra is awesome.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that I noticed is that they both liberally dropped their swords very quickly. Like their swords both left their hands in their first immediate outing. I just found that interesting.
And actually, I was going to say the mandroids that show up later, or I hope I'm getting the name right, in the episode, one of the themes in that episode is both of them losing their swords and Orko causes them to disappear. So maybe it's just a running theme. Yeah. All right. So going forward, Orko is in the Sky Spy and he's like, I know, why don't I just try magic to land this? And Orko's magic is like just make up words and whatever. And he does cause it to crash. He does cause it to come down and it, I guess, I don't know if his spell warps it, but basically he lands his craft on Earth.
He like accidentally crafts a wormhole or something. Yeah.
The logic is that Eternia, which is where He-Man is, Etheria, which is where She-Ra is, and Earth are three different places that, you know, are in theory reachable via like space devices, but they're not close by. And so it is a big deal that Orko gets to Earth.
Yeah. So, and I think it also would stand to wit that the people of Eternia and Etheria are like, maybe we shouldn't allow Earth to be accessed by Skeletor and Hordak.
The best logic, because Marlena does know immediately where Orko is, which, and I've got theories, Jeff, because it's like, it seems like it's really easy for Eternians to get to Earth if they want to, and they know where it is. That is established as canon in this episode.
Yeah. It's like if you move out of Wyoming to go to New York City, you still know where Wyoming is, but you're like, I'm not going back there.
Yeah. All right. So this isn't in the plot synopsis you sent me, but I think is really important. So Orko crash lands and gets out. He hears two children. This is Miguel and Alicia. And apparently the story we're fed is that they are searching for a Christmas tree and they've gotten lost. They almost die. They're out in the middle of nowhere.
He saves them from getting crushed by an avalanche. Yeah.
Yeah. And Orko uses his magic. And this is a case where, you know, Orko's magic is working. That is a running theme of the show, of Orko's magic being hit or miss. But he actually saves them. Mm-hmm. And then these kids throughout the entire show are so nonplussed by so many things, including that they just died. And they're like, we're looking for a Christmas tree. Prince Adam's illegitimate love child. I'm saying it right now. So Alicia looks.
She's very pale, very blonde.
He looks just like Prince Adam. It's like we were looking for a Christmas tree and got lost.
They are certainly. I was very pleased to see that they went with a multicultural group of children, that it wasn't just like a, you know, Dick and Jane situation where it's just is like pasty white kids. It's like these are Latinx kids. I think
maybe
that's,
we just,
I mean,
anyway, yeah, in theory by name, yes, but anyway, so one of them. So anyway, so she starts crying and says she's lost, and Orko says, well, you found me. So Orko's actually doing a good job now, and he takes him back to the Sky Spy.
But here's the thing that just blows my mind is that that is an alien wizard from space. And they are like, hey, bud, you want to put us down? And it's like, no, you should be trying to kill this thing. Like, this is a monster. I always find that very interesting that these kids just totally don't give a shit that a potentially demonic alien wizard is just like floating them around and just whatever.
This entire episode, they do not respond to anything. But I still might throw out that maybe they're like kids of the 80s, because we'll get to their parents later too. And in general, this is like, these kids do not react at all. Now, once they get there, basically they're saying they're getting a Christmas tree. Orko goes, what's Christmas? Perfect segue to start explaining Christmas. And they said, we're going to explain all about it. Alicia says, well, first there was this angel, and then boom.
Beam. Oh, Alicia goes deep.
She starts deep, but we cut away. She's like, well, there was this. She's like, we'll explain the whole thing to you. There was this angel, and boom, we cut away again. So we are not going to explain Christmas on this episode, but we're, in theory, the Orko is going to learn about it.
One of the things about this special that I think is really interesting and important is that they very quickly glance over the religious aspects of Christmas, and they really push the more secular parts of it, which I found very interesting and smart, that it's not about like, oh, our savior was born on this day. Like, they're not pushing that so much as like, they intimate that this is the history of it, but here's what it really means. And it's about like being with your family and showing the ones that
you
love.
Also, to be fair, what really probably happened, and, you know, we went a little bit about this at the top of the show about, you know, the era this was made in the TV and like standards and practices and trying to get around people's, like, you know, He-Man and She-Ra would have watch groups that they were basically, you know, censors they were trying to placate. And so they might have been told, like, you're not allowed to say this about Christmas. So, like, that might have been what they were allowed to say with, you know, the guidelines they were giving, or trying to avoid stepping on any toes.
Or floating over any toes if you're Orko.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so back on Eternia, speaking of Orko, they find his spellbook and go, wait a minute. Orko was in that ship. And then they've got a tracker on the Sky Spy, because, you know, this was a spy device. That makes a lot of sense. And he finds a location for Orko. As I mentioned, Marlena immediately recognizes this Earth's coordinates, which does lead me to the theory that someone from Eternia is getting to Earth and knows this family. Anyway, that remains my theory. Man-at-Arms says he needs a transport beam that has a carrion water crystal. Jeff, I found this out in one of the shows. You want to know a bit of trivia about carrion?
Well, if it's I know, because I know this, because I also collected. So Filmation's, their follow-up to the He-Man and She-Ra run, was actually a space western that was called Brave Star. And it was very important. It was actually a character that he was Native American, which I thought was interesting, in New Texas, in the planet of New Texas. And the sort of gold that they were mining was carrion.
So He-Man and Brave Star also, you know, so I mean, you can maybe say it's a, you know, an Easter egg to that. So awesome. Good work. Jeff gets an A for knowing.
Oh, no, I remember that, because every toy you bought came with a little carrion crystal.
Really? I had some of those, but you remember the toys better, because I had a lot of these toys, but don't remember them.
Oh, I had the Brave Star toys. Oh, yeah, I had them all.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I had the Tex-Tex. I had the whoever that red squid face monster guy was. I had the bartender that threw discuses. This guy.
I watched that show, and I remember the horse. I remember Brave Star. I remember he had like a grandpa or some wise sage. I don't remember the rest.
Brave Star. The problem with Brave Star is that the toys were like too tall.
Really?
They were like 10-inch toys. And that was really out of like what was in fashion at the time, was 3 3/4 inches or 5 to 6 inches. So adding they were tall. They were not.
Yeah.
Not little guy.
Brave Star's a giant. All right.
That's how they are on there.
So, but it turns out they don't have any carrion on Eternia, so they're going to have to go back to Etheria. I hope I'm getting the names right, which is fun. We're going to have a She-Ra adventure. And again, this is the worst subtlety ever, because Prince Adam is like, well, could She-Ra help us out, Adora? And she's like, I think she could. Wink.
Yeah. It's like, and everyone's like, we get it. Yeah.
Okay, got it. All right. So Adora goes back to Etheria to look for that. She meets up with Mermista, who is a mermaid to help out.
French mermaid. That's a French-ass mermaid.
I was going to say this. She's a French mermaid, and so that's her accent. And it's one of those where I'm like, when I first heard, I was like, I don't know your accent, I feel like I'm offended. I looked it up. It's French. I was like,
it borders on the potentially, it's a French accent that sounds like an offensive Asian accent.
Yes.
Where you hear it at first and you're like, are you serious right now? And then you hear it again. You're like, oh no. Okay. No, it's just French. They're white.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I could have used that when I was watching it. I should have watched the directors, because the James Eaton, I believe was the name, or I hope I got the name right. But he does a commentary after the fact. Etalk, I hope I'm saying the name right. He does a commentary after the fact, and he mentioned that. I was like, that would have helped the first time, because I was just looking around in an empty hotel room for a while.
Anything I can do to help you, I would like to help you out. We will take you to the place where the beast monster lives.
Yeah. And that's the thing. They go look for the beast monster, which is the best name. It's funny because this is one of those where you either love the camp and go, this is awesome, or say, oh my God, this is stupid. I fall on the former.
So awesome. For those of you wondering, at around the 15 minute mark, here's the process by which She-Ra shows up. She goes, the pool of the beast monster. Looks like nobody's home. Someone's home. The beast monster. That is the series of statements that she says in that order. And it's nearly verbatim.
That is awesome.
And I laughed so hard watching that I had to rewind it. And I went over to Val. I was like, hey, we got to watch this. And she kind of rolled her eyes. She's like, I have better things to do than to watch this thing from your little cartoon show for your little podcast or whatever. She watched it and she was just losing her shit at how funny that was. It was so funny. The pool of the beast monster looks like no one's home. Oop, someone's home. The beast monster.
Well, and also we can throw this a little as part of what made He-Man good and bad is it actually had good animation. When there was animation, but the trick to a lot of old animation, He-Man included, is you would have stock footage.
It's repetitive footage, yeah.
Well, I guess that'd be the term, yeah. So it's repetitive footage. So basically, you'd have an image of He-Man punching, an image of He-Man laughing, an image of She-Ra kicking. You know, of course, the I have the power is always the same.
Yeah, He-Man's punching the camera is the same as She-Ra's kicking the camera.
It's the same every time.
They have a repetitive, there are repetitive things like the running, a run, a roll. You know, a walk to one direction, a walk to the other direction, a jump. Like there are a very common way to save money in animation is to repeat the same cells over and over again.
And so, of course, that constrains you because if you're going, okay, well, this is a short scene. And additionally, we're structured to just have these or the person standing still, right? And just their mouth's moving. It's like we're constrained by how much. So it's like that's a funny thing to consider about dialogue in old shows, which hurts it is going. Okay, if you had a normal actor in a play and you have 10 seconds, you could say, okay, say something natural, Jeff. And you're like, okay, well, we need her to say something with this much time that looks this way. And that's what we get. We get the cut, cut, cut.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I would also like to add a couple things. First, there's a couple things about this scene that are absolutely unhinged. First off, to name a large monster the quote beast monster is the laziest shit I've ever heard in my life. Whoever did that should go to jail. The beast monster. That's like saying the monster monster or the beast beast.
Wait. Is there a monster monster in He-Man or a beast beast? I want them now.
There's a beast man.
I know there's a beast man.
So there's that. Then the monster comes out from the ground and he looks like shit. He's not a particularly well designed monster. He looks like if Fin Fang Foom had like a weird rounded head. The repetitive roar is great. I actually really like that.
You love
roar.
Those. You love repetitive roars.
That's the roar of my childhood.
It's been said on the show about Zelda 2. Jeff, you give him a repetitive roar, he is happy.
But the other part about that, too, is that he's like the swordsman in Indy. Like the beast monster shows up to be a problem and immediately and promptly gets his ass kicked and we are never heard from him again. And that is hilarious to me.
And I was going to say, well, so the whole premise is She-Ra's keeping Beast Monster busy while Mermista goes and grabs the crystal.
The Carrium Water crystal.
Yeah. So that happens. But yeah, She-Ra's pretty strong. I think the scene doesn't have to go that long. And here's where
we also need to add that real surprise, if you didn't know coming in, Swift Wind, her flying unicorn Pegasus hybrid talks, and he talks like he plays for the 1957 Yankees. Like,
it's true. Yeah.
Swiftwind's voice for a show that was designed for young girls to watch or whatever, and you see this beautiful, beautiful, like, flying unicorn covered in beautiful, like, soft pastel colors. And then he's like, turns to Shearer, he's like, oh, fuck. It looks like the Beast Monster's coming. Holy shit. It might as well be smoking a cigar during this. His voice is so jarring from what you would expect from a She-Ra cartoon. And then there's, oh my God, look at me. I'm a beautiful winged Pegasus. Just real unhinged energy from Swiftwind. And I'm all about it. Like this guy, he might, like Swiftwind might as well be wearing like a white A shirt. Calling those a wife beater back in the day. Yeah. Like he's really, I'm surprised he doesn't have pasta sauce spilled on him somewhere. The voice is so funny.
That would be hilarious to have a, yeah.
That's the fucking Beast Monster.
Okay, anyway. Okay, so they get the crystal. They're leaving. And then a huge group of robots show up called the Monstroids. I was calling them wrong. Anyway, so the Monstroids show up. So much weird about this, Jeff. I assumed they were important by how they showed up.
I mean, they're think of them like sentinels in the X-Men.
But I guess what I'm saying is when they showed up, I was like, oh, was this a thing in She-Ra? Did this matter? Nope, they make one more appearance. They don't look anything alike. There was an original Monstroid toy that looked nothing like these.
Yeah, but it does make sense. So the Monstroid toy looks like kind of a giant crab, like a giant robot crab. And it is a member of the Horde.
And according to the comic, it actually is. It's not a droid. It's just a giant monster that they summon.
Yes. Well, the energy behind the comics continuity is insane. I have the hardcover of all of the comics, and that through line is wild. The Monstroid toy does very much look like a giant, and it's Horde color based, so it's going to be black, red, and gray. But you can see what they're doing is like, oh, okay, so we have this toy, so we might want to advertise that Monstroid is a thing. But in reality, they're more of like a slightly dangerous nuisance.
Well, what they're kind of doing is it's almost like the Decepticons show up, and it looks like so here's what's funny. You can go two ways. Either one, it's a deliberate slight at the Decepticons because she calls them like those horrible robots or something.
Well, it's a Swift one looks at me. He's like, these robots are transforming. What an evil group. And it's very clear because you got to remember, too, like this is Mattel. And Transformers are Hasbro.
Yes.
So it is the direct competition.
So the question was, okay, you've got this big toy commercial. Do you want to spend your time advertising your toys or making fun of your competitor? Or I was thinking, oh, are these new toys? Are they going to show up in She-Ra? And nope, they never come up again. So they basically spent like the Mandroids and the Mansheens. I was calling them Mandroids. So it's Monstroids, sorry, and Mansheens. I was confusing those two. They both show up as a key part of this Christmas special. And I was thinking, oh, are these important characters? Are these from a property? Nope. It's possible they were planning a third spinoff that just didn't happen because, you know, Mattel crashed. Mm-hmm. But I was remarkable.
I mean, He-Man crashed, really. Mattel did fine.
They did fine, yeah. But anyway, I was expecting these things to matter and they didn't. And you have this He-Man She-Ra Christmas special with a lot of good stuff in it that I would really like. We'll talk more about some of that coming up. And they waste a tremendous amount of time on this weird subplot, which is, you have these Monstroid robots that show up. They briefly attack She-Ra, but then run away. They think they've captured her in a ball and run away. They're like, yeah, you know, classic villain. You just leave her. She's able to cut herself out with a sword. And then what I said, as you notice, this is the same animation. I call it Sweet Chin Music. She does like the Shawn Michaels kick.
Yeah,
which is awesome.
She slices her way out of it. I guess the Monstroids, you need to have a form of antagonist to allow what's going to happen next to show up. Like, the Monstroids serve two purposes. One, they are enforcers of Horde Prime. And two, they are the antagonists for the, God, what are they called? The Mansheens? Is that what they are?
This is it. This is it for the Mansheens, Jeff. If you want the Mansheen lore, watch this episode.
It's just this, right?
Yep.
With their little idiot dog.
which that matters a little, but you didn't need any of this, Jeff. That's my two cents. And this really weighs down this Christmas special, because I'm trying to argue there's some good parts in it. I really enjoyed it. And even as I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, this did not belong in this Christmas special.
It's a means to an end. It really is a means to an end. You need the dog. You know what you need
could get a dog. They could have brought a dog with them. But I don't know why I'm arguing like script doctoring this horrible thing. We agree that the script
No, but I'm actually going to disagree with you on this, Dre, because they don't have like dogs on Eternia.
Dog with the kid when they come along.
You know, the Monstroid is a toy they want to push. So you put that sort of thing in there and you say, okay, well, who are the Monstroids? Are they working for Horde? Sure, but they also have their own thing going on, the Mancheens. Oh, you know what? We'll add the fact that there's this Mancheen dog in there. We can throw these characters out immediately. They only really matter here. And then move on. And then, you know, so it takes... The other thing, too, is that whole Monstroid part takes, what, 3 minutes?
Well, they show up again later, and we'll get to that. By the way, I'm going to throw this out, Jeff. It's kind of disappeared, and this would be a fun thing to do. You were on a Best Bad Movie Ever defending the He-Man movie, the live-action one with Dolph Lundgren. And yes. I'm actually kind of on your side. One thing that I want to throw out that's kind of interesting is the premise of that really is the Earth, you know, Earth versus Eternia thing. Mm-hmm. And what I'll say is, funny enough, that plot line showed up when He-Man was at its peak. So, you know, there are a lot of things to point at the, you know, I think it was Canon Films, right, is probably the bigger fault of that movie. But it's worth saying that for the things that people bash about that movie, the plot, it's like, oh, it's worth noting. This was a plot line that He-Man itself had already tried to use.
Yeah.
And did fine. I'd say.
Well, because that movie came out in what, 87 as the toy was dying. So it really came out at the time when it was trying a last desperate attempt to save it, which is a real thing. Now, one of the things about that movie, and people are like, why did they go to Earth? It's like, because how were you going to afford Eternia in 1987 off of Canon Films? It's not going to happen. The amount of effort needed in there. And also by giving it Earth, it makes it a weirder situation. Not everything is going to be Lord of the Rings with this big, lush, illustrious thing. A lot of, you know, they were making these movies on a budget.
I'll throw this out. The He-Man show did release the Sword of Power, I think was called the She-Ra introduction. Mm-hmm. And that was a low budget. And it basically was 5 episodes of the She-Ra cartoon, but they did release it and made like $6 million. This is a funny thing with a lot of bigger name studios, which is there are these profitable things you could do wisely. You know, like you can release a $2 million cartoon into a limited number of theaters. It'll make $6 million. Everybody will be happy. Or you can spend a lot of money on a movie with a huge risk if it doesn't do well. And of course, big studios always tend to go towards the latter. I think that showed up in the documentary we were talking about. I think He-Man, if they tried to sustain it a little better, do some more with it, it might have been able to go.
Yeah. The problem with He-Man toys was that He-Man was designed for a specific age, and as that age got older, they were getting less and less interested in that toy line. Because when you think about it, like 1982, when they start coming out, and the average age, you know, that people would be 5. So, you know, are they really going to want to play with He-Man action figures when they're 10 and 11 as kids start to sort of creep away?
I realize actually George Lucas upped the nerd show in that I'm kind of doing a prequel, because we're talking about our nostalgia. That's kind of been the running through line thus far. And really what you're saying, what happened, I think myself, and I seem similar to you, is when you're young, you're really into Muppets, you're really into He-Man, you're really into action figures. And then what comes along, right, as you're saying, right around that 8 to 10 age is like video games. So it's like I went from going, I really want Castle Grayskull, or I really want Snake Mountain. I think you and I both got Snake Mountain as a gift, I heard, which is awesome.
I got Snake Mountain for Christmas.
Such a cool toy. That was amazing. Yeah. I got it for birthday. It's amazing toy. But I went from asking for Snake Mountain for a birthday gift to going to asking for, hey, get me Mega Man 2, get me Sonic 2. So that makes a lot of sense to happen. But let's keep going on with the plot.
So I would like to add, too, that the failure of the Masters of the Universe movie actually did change the landscape for a lot of the movies that were going to come out, and they ended up going direct to TV. And a good example of that would be the G.I. Joe movie, which was originally supposed to be released theatrically, and then they saw how much He-Man bombed, and they were like, screw this, and it ended up being just a series. They released it as a series, like a mini-series of G.I. Joe, like on TV, and then they released it on VHS.
Very nice. I've never seen that. I wasn't a huge G.I. Joe person. I've seen a couple of the cartoons, but
it is wild. Also, I would add too that it kind of looks like, you know, the Beast Monster's face, and I made fun of it. It does look like the Fright Zone puppet. So that might be part of it. So the Fright Zone from the Horde had a puppet that you would put your hand in and it would be like, I'm going to eat your
Yeah, that's right. I remember. And then there was one, the Hordak. Yeah, are you talking the Hordak? The She-Ra one, right? Like the little layer thing.
So Hordak. Well, it's funny too, because people seem to forget that while Hordak and the Horde are from the She-Ra property, toy-wise, they're actually Masters of the Universe. They're He-Man. So they're built to scale with the He-Man stuff. So if you're getting like a Hordak, for example, it's the same packaging. It's not the She-Ra packaging. The only characters that came in the She-Ra packaging were the main characters on the good side.
I think I should have just kept She-Ra. That's weird. I mean, and there's a lot there. And I'd say, well, a future. There's nothing that stops us from having a future He-Man show as well. It's not just
I'm down. I actually just got a Hordak graded. I just got it graded. I bought it at Merrimack Games and Comics.
Dre here from the future. I'd be remiss not to let you know that Jeff actually showed the Hordak toy that's graded, and it's really, really cool. Obviously doesn't really fit so well in an audio medium, but we'll make sure to get a clip of that up somewhere, you know, Patreon, Instagram. I'll probably put a link in the show notes, nerdnumbers.substack.com. Back to the show.
Okay, so Orko has been told in the past by Man-at-Arms if he sees a light to step into it, so I think that was more Man-at-Arms being mean, but Orko remembers it. Orko is with the kids, and they are wrapping up the Christmas story, kind of, because then they said, then the three wise men get to Bethlehem. And they're like, okay, so you're going to finish the story. And he's like, what a wonderful story. And of course, never finish up. You're like, what? And then to your point, this alien space wizard tells these kids, okay, step into the light with me. After they've actually said an angelic tale. And he goes in, and they all go back to eternity.
And they were singing singing Jingle Bells wrong.
Were they singing Jingle Bells? I missed
they
that.
They were singing
that.
Jingle Bells, and they did Jingle Bells.
But that might even be licensing or whatever. Like they're allowed to say the words, but not allowed to say the tunes.
Jingle Bells not public domain?
Bells I mean, Happy Birthday wasn't forever, so it's entirely possible. But anyway, so they end up back on Eternia, and they bring their Christmas tree with them. And they're back there, and, you know, Marlena recognizes it, and they basically say to the kids, we can get you back home, but it's going to be a couple of days. And Marlena goes, okay, well, I'll tell you what, you know, it's near Christmas time, and it's near my kid's birthday, so we'll merge the celebrations. And one of the kids, you were talking like amazing dialogue, one of the kids says, that would be fine, but what about Santa? And I wasn't like you, I didn't rewind and watch over and over, but that just got me. I was like, these kids are not responding at all.
No,
like this is amazing, but that's the
they
thing.
They're surrounded by monsters
that have kidnapped them.
Yes.
And are like, we're going to celebrate Christmas. And they're like, okay, just one question. Is Santa going to show up? Spoiler alert, Jeff, he will, but we'll talk about that later.
And I would like to add, too, that these kids are just like, they're not orphans. Like, they're like, our parents are missing us.
Though. We're going to spoiler alert on that. Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to find out. They're horrible parents. All right, so this is the crux where I would say the episode actually makes a little bit of sense in what they should have played with a lot, which is, I didn't know too much, but Horde Prime, who I guess is kind of the leader of the Horde, and Hordak is
he's like the emperor of that world, and weirdly, like, Skeletor left them, but apparently now he's back vying for the affections of Horde Prime.
Well, Skeletor, I guess, I looked this up a little, so the canon that shows up in, like, The Princess of Power is Skeletor was an apprentice to Hordak. And then they're the ones that kidnap. They try and kidnap both of the children of Eternia, but only get Adora, only get She-Ra. And that's why She-Ra's on Etheria. And Skeletor tries to take over Eternia. So that was the whole premise there. And they both answer to Horde Prime. And Horde Prime has detected that the appearance of these kids on Eternia has brought with them the Christmas spirit. And the claim is this might be one of the only things that could have thrown them. So they have to get the kids to get rid of the Christmas spirit, which... You know, I'll give you like the Christmas spirit.
It's sort of like an anti-despair energy. And he's like, we got to get this out of here. We got to push the despair needs that we have out here.
very like there've been Care Bear episodes with this kind of plot of like, oh, this person has the energy, or we need to get this person happy.
There's a lot of like the joy, like that is I'm pretty sure that's also like Rainbow Bright's main thing is just like, we've got to get all the joy out of this.
It works for me. So
the 80s were really big on eliminating joy.
Yeah, I mean, Reagan did a good job of that. All right, so yeah, they get back, and Bo has written a song about Christmas, and we talked about the Fraggle Rock Christmas song made for TV. We're like, yeah, we can accept it, but it wasn't good. This song is terrible.
Bo is an interesting character in the She-Ra canon, because even as a kid watching it and seeing Bo, I was like, this guy's gay, right? Like, even though I didn't really get, like, that seems to be the implication, right? Is that Bo is, because Bo, you know, you hate to say these classically, you know, because it was the 80s too, that he's got like, he's wearing basically a half shirt of armor with like a little heart over it. And he's got like a kind of Freddie Mercury mustache, and he's clean shaven otherwise.
The
80s
did not do a great job not coding things, especially
he's poorly coded as like the gay member of the Princess of Power's, you know, myriad friends. You know, an interesting character. You know, he's an archer, but he's pretty vestigial in this.
Anyway, but that's all he shows up is to do this song with them. But while he's doing the song,
and then not shoot an arrow. Like they the kids are kidnapped, right?
Hordak shows up with a tractor beam and takes them immediately. Now here is a flaw in Horde Prime's logic, but it works. I mean, it works for the villains, which is, instead of telling Skeletor and Hordak work together and bring back the kids, he says, whichever one of you does it gets my affections.
That's,
and I guess he's also classic. Told that. Yeah.
That's classic. That's, if you look, actually a lot of the more recent Star Wars canon has a lot of like the Emperor doing that with other apprentices and making Vader like keep his spot by like competing with these characters. So like that's a pretty common evil guy trope, is to not, don't work. Good guys team up and work together and cooperate. Bad guys selfishly try to do what they need to do so they can get theirs.
And that happens. I mean, that is a good moral that shows up in a lot of like kid shows, is like the bad guys could have won had they just, you know, been good. Yeah. So same thing. The Monstroids apparently have been given a deal by Horde Prime as well. So he has three different factions chasing these kids. And these three factions do a better job than our heroes at keeping each other down, but that's the fun.
Also, the Monstroids transform into useless things. Like, one of them transforms into a tank, but one of them, his big transformation is that he just goes from being vertical to horizontal.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they're horrible. Away, yeah. If you're taking a dig at, you don't make like cool-looking Transformer. Like I said, I thought there was either promoting new toys or making fun of their competition. They're making fun of their competition, which, why would you waste the time on that? But that's what they did.
It really feels like the Monstroids got the least amount of thought.
Yeah.
In this whole process, which is very interesting to me, because like if you're trying to make something big and scary in that, they really limit what they look like. It's very funny.
But so the Monstroids chase off Hordak. The Mansheen show up and help the Mansheen show up with He-Man and She-Ra and help rescue the chip. Okay.
Don't Google Mansheens, folks. Just take our word for it. The Mansheens look stupid as hell.
They make no sense.
They look like toddlers wearing bright snowsuits, but also they're robots. They look absolutely ridiculous. They don't belong. They don't look right. They just seem like just every terrible cartoon sidekick rolled into one. Having like,
we're the Mansheens.
And you're like, I can't.
And I was like, are you something? It's like, no, they were created for this special and they are terrible. And they're like, you know, they have different names. I didn't write them down, Jeff. I apologize. I don't care.
Oh, like, do you not like, care about their names?
That's why they call me Zipper or something. Like, they don't call me Zipper for nothing. That's a recurring thing.
Clutch, cutter, crank, digger, driller, piston, relay, rotor, whipsaw, wrench, and Zipper.
It looked like you were reading that. If you have that memorized, Jeff, you have my condolences.
I could not memorize that. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
No, so I had that written down.
So anyway, they show up and try and help the kids escape. But then Skeletor, you know, this is classic, you know, the Hordak has him. The Monstroids get him. The heroes save it, but then Skeletor gets the kid, as well as a puppy, a Manchine puppy named Relay. But as Skeletor's escaping, Hordak says, if I can't get him, nobody can. Shoots down Skeletor, and Skeletor lands in some snowy mountains.
Yeah, it is very funny, too, because Hordak is clearly supposed to be like a bat. Like, he's clearly a bat. And yet they give him...
You'd be like, you're a vampire, right? Like,
but because of that upturned nose that he has as the bat, they decided to give him a pig quality where he would go... Every time he would talk, he's like, we're going to go for She-Ra. And it's like, that's weird, right? It's a weird choice.
But again, like, that's... What's amazing about He-Man and She-Ra is, you know, you have these really talented people working on it. But it's a lot of first pass, let's just get something out. And I would say we've brought up this subject on the show a lot about, you know, perfect being the enemy of good. And, you know, sometimes stuff just has to be released. And I would say He-Man a lot of times falls below that, where it's like, you should have given it one more pass.
Yeah, they didn't need to go for perfect to not make this.
I mean, that's the point, is perfect is the enemy of good, but like rushing it out. But again, it was released, say, for instance, on Christmas, and they had toys. So you can tell, like, a lot of the He-Man issue is trying to push for dates, and then you even find out they were unable to make those dates with like toy releases, etc. So is what it is. But this is the best part of the special, in my opinion. It's Skeletor interacting with the kids, and the logic being that Skeletor is being influenced by the spirit of Christmas, because Skeletor's hanging out with his kids and he's like, you guys suck, just follow me, leave the dog, right? And then like an evil beast shows up and Skeletor fights off the evil beasts, and he tells the kids to follow them, and he agrees to take the puppy.
The snow beast.
And he's, you know, he's going, what's happening with me? And then one of the best back and forths is the kids talk about Christmas, and Skeletor's like, tell me about it. And I'm missing the dialogue, but it's so good, Jeff, where it's like, you know, he's like, so what happens? You get like, they're like, you get presents. He's like, oh, and then they explode. And they're like, no, just good presents. He's like, well, then what makes them good? So. It's just amazing. This scene is worth it.
They keep, and that is really where, because like you can see, he's like, I should carry the dog, or he like makes a reason that he gets to carry the dog, and everything. And it is very funny because they keep talking to me like, you're really nice, Mister, and he's like, I am not nice. I am not kind. I am not wonderful.
This is a good spot to throw in when we talk about like why He-Man aged well. I'd say the music did well. The toys did really well. Some of the voice acting is amazing. And I mean, the two big people on the original, of course, are John Irwin and Alan Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer, and man, that dude.
Have you met him? He's been at like lots of the.
I had lunch with him. I got to have lunch with him during at PowerCon in 2021. PowerCon 2021. In Anaheim, because we had all the same green room. So we would all sit there, and it was like, it was weird. We were sitting there and like Oppenheimer was there, and there was like some guy who was like a WWE referee was there with us. It was a very interesting mix of people that were all there enjoying lunch together. But yeah, I was like, hey, Falcor, how you doing?
Oh, he's Falcor?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, Oppenheimer.
Holy
is
cow.
Most people. So, like, when you look at, like, 80s voice acting, like, there are, it's, like, 9 people that did the majority of the work. And, you know, I think Oppenheimer, Frank Welker is another example that, you know, as of recording this, we've been doing Tom and Jeff Watch Batman, where Frank Welker has been doing a lot of the stuff on Super Friends as well.
My condolences for some of the bad old animation I've been watching lately, Jeff. That I get to add to. Yeah, I mean, this is ridiculous. And then, I mean, you know, rest in peace, Kevin Conroy, who actually did manage to come back. He did Hordak in the remake, one of the best voice actors, and of course, known for Batman Bruce Wayne. And I just got to give a shout out to like John Irwin as the Prince Adam He-Man is one of the best.
It's great.
Like, it's up there. It's the different voices, the strength. And then apparently, like that documentary was bringing up, like he was just kind of a pretty shy, reserved guy. So it's like, this is fascinating where like, I'd say in the convention days, you know, something could have been a much different world, maybe. But it sounds like even back when He-Man was at its peak, Oppenheimer was saying that like John Irwin was like always just kind of shy and reserved.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure he did okay financially from that.
Yeah, but not a problem. It's like one of these interesting ones where he's like a huge figure in your childhood, and, you know, we hit the era where voice actors of famous shows got to this elevated stage. And, you know, I don't think he ever hit it. And I think part of that was him not wanting to, which is more than fine.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, Oppenheimer's done a lot because he was, I mean, even in this one, he's, you know, he's not only is he Skeletor, but he's also, I think he's Zipper.
Isn't he Man-at-Arms as well?
And Man-at-Arms. Yeah, he's Man-at-Arms, Zipper, and Skeletor. That covers a lot of ground.
Yeah, I mean, Zipper, you know, the unheralded, I can't do it, Jeff. They suck. I hate the Mancheens. They're the worst. All right.
They are pretty awful, yeah.
Can't be perfect all the time. All right, so anyway, so Skeletor's got the kids. He-Man and She-Ra are trying to show up. Hordak comes back, and then, of course, Horde Prime comes, and then Skeletor, with the Christmas spirit, knocks out Horde Prime.
I mean, it's funny because, yeah, it's the Christmas spirit, but also he's just like, don't tell me what to do.
he really
is just like, I do not like being told what to do. And I would also like to, it's a very phallic shot that he makes where he like, he holds his staff very low when he takes that shot. He's not holding it up and pointing it like he's calling his shot like Babe Ruth. Well, he is holding it low.
Yeah, I mean,
and he just takes it out.
And, you know, then what I like is, you know, He-Man and She-Ra are surprised that Skeletor saves them. And this is like a very Christmas miracle, like a ceasefire between enemies, right? Like,
yeah,
a question that the director's, whatever you want to call it, the commentary on this had when I was listening is like, why do they just let Skeletor go? And it's like, Skeletor's like, I saved the kids. They're like, cool, we'll, you know, we'll get back to fighting on Monday. Enjoy the holidays. Which
he's also
know,
like, I'm not doing anything wrong now. All I've done is save people. So go to hell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, there's due process in Eternia. It's well known that He-Man follows due process, right?
I mean, okay. I don't see why not, right? Right, so yeah, anyways. They end up like, they end up really screwing over some Horde troopers as well. And that's where you saw Multibot show up. And Multibot was one of the two toys that they made that was you piece it together and it can be a million different things. Because there was Modulok and Multibot, and Modulok looked more, he's actually in the beginning. He works for the Horde and he was a transfer. He originally was a Skeletor villain and he transferred to the Horde. So he was in both cartoons regularly. So Modulok, it was like he came with different heads, different legs, a torso, different, you know, like all these different parts. And then they did a robot version of it called Multibot. And that is what they were doing with this character as well. So there were all the Horde troopers are robots. And then also there was like a general of those Horde troopers. And that was Multibot. Another toy to sell.
Yeah. I'm glad you're here to rec, because like, I'm like, I didn't recognize that character was there. I believe you. Like, yeah, I knew a lot of the core He-Man characters. And then, yeah, as soon as you get to She-Ra, I didn't know much.
Yeah, well, it is. You know, it is what it is.
They get back to the castle, and that's where they're having their Christmas party. And Santa shows up.
And birthday party.
And Christmas birthday party. You know, maybe Prince Adam is Jesus. We have not confirmed this, right?
Yeah, that could be very doable. That could be very true.
You know, and these are different worlds. There's, I question that. I forgot to bring that up, like early in the script, like just noting like the Christmas time. Well, we've got three different planets. Are there rules about seasons?
It's all aligned, baby. It's all aligned. I bet Marlene has got her planner. I bet she probably is keeping track of a calendar. She probably has somebody that works at the palace that keeps an Earth calendar.
Well, it's kind of ridiculous. As you noticed, like I forgot that she was from Earth, or maybe just never even saw it. Cause you know, there were like over 100 episodes of the original show. If you didn't catch them the first time through when we were younger, and when they finally did come out on DVD, I just could not make it through it.
And they're not good.
They're not at all. But Santa is there and he gives the kids flying belts. Man-at-Arms sends him home. And we
with are flying belts. That's the most irresponsible thing that they could possibly do. These kids are going to get sucked into a jet engine.
It's something that people do to parents with kids, is they will give their kids toys that suck.
Yeah,
and we hate you, and we know why you did it, and I understand, but we get it. So like the fun uncle is allowed to be like, I don't have to live with this kid. I can give you the loud toy that you hate that your kid's never going to want to give up. And it's like, well played. Well played. Yeah. I see what you did there. So that's what they did to the kids. They're like, we are giving these stupid kids something that's going to drive their irresponsible parents crazy. More power
these
to
kids
them.
Are going to die from this. There's a 0%. If I had a flying belt, I'd be dead. Because
they
like,
let's be fair. Those kids were already going to die. I mean, they were out in the middle of nowhere. About
they're on borrowed time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the rest of their life is just gravy at this point in time. Yeah. It is very, just like they didn't give them like a manual.
Well, you don't
they
need
give them like a, here's how you use this thing. They're just like, here's this thing that will defy gravity. Good luck, children.
I remember the 80s, a lot of toys. I never looked at the manual. You just figured out, Jeff. That's what you do. And now I'm old and I don't understand anything. Circle of life, baby.
Yeah, the 80s had a lot of, there was a lot of toys that were like, hey, this looks like a real gun.
Go.
Cops will think that too.
All right. Yeah. It's also revealed that Man-at-Arms has a transmitter that can view what's going on Earth because they're watching the kids when they get home. So...
Sends it back to their parents. One of them, their father is clearly just Mario.
It looks like Mario.
He looks so much like Mario that Val was like, is that Mario?
Thank you. Like, no, all right, Val, not here. I agree. So they get back home. Their parents are like, well, we're just happy you're home. We don't care where you were. We're going to ask you about it tomorrow. The kids even try and tell them where they were. They're like, a space wizard kidnapped us and we were on another planet. We got flying belts. The parents are like, whatever. And you're like, oh, okay.
You
this,
are
this
far too
everything.
Kind to the parents' behavior here. Because those parents are assholes to these kids.
I'm saying these are horrible parents. That explains the whole show. When
why did
these kids follow a space wizard? Why are these kids completely fine? It's like, oh, they have horrible parents.
You are ascribing a much more kind reaction of the parents. The parents are like, where were you? And they like explained it and they're like, we don't want you lying. Like the parents were dicks. They weren't just like, okay, whatever.
They
were like,
we're
go to bed.
We'll talk about it tomorrow.
They were not cool about it. They were dicks about it. And their kids were missing. And they're just mean. And they're like, we were abducted. And they're like, I don't want to hear about it.
That's fair. I don't know. I thought they were a little more apathetic, but I'll rewatch the scene, Jeff. I'll watch.
They're like, we don't have time to hear the story of why you've been missing.
Fourth time. Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, man. You might want to listen a little bit.
And then they fly by and the parents go, what? And then back on attorney, everybody looks and laughs. Ha ha ha. And then again, another, oh, my brother pulling off the Santa disguise. So again, when we're talking blue, I was like, this scene does not belong in a kid's movie where she was like, and he's like, oh, you know, it was me all along, sister. There you go. End of that. And then at the end, Adam does the PSA with Orko where we're like, Christmas is about caring, sharing.
I have it.
And presents.
Okay, I have it. It's so that's how Christmas first came to Eternia. Not everyone celebrates Christmas, but the spirit of the Christmas season is within us all. It's a season of love and joy and caring. And presents! Presents are nice, Orko, but Christmas means much more than that. I know, Adam. Christmas is a time of peace and caring and happiness. That's right, Orko. And what would make you happiest this Christmas? Presents! Oh, Orko.
Top-notch writing. Can't beat that. All right, Jeff, I don't regret watching this. I kind of regret making you watch it again.
No, it was very mean.
What were your thoughts?
It actually went by a lot faster than I thought it was going to go.
Because it was short. It's only 45 minutes.
Which means it's an hour special. You know, it's an hour TV special. So they sucked it down to 44 minutes. But if you've ever tried watching a 22-minute episode of He-Man, that's the longest 22 minutes. It's a good enough commercial for a couple of things that are coming out. You know, they really push She-Ra, and it is what it is. It's a thing that people love in theory. It's a great piece of art to have hanging on your wall if you want to get the Dave Perillo, He-Man Christmas special or He-Man and She-Ra Christmas special thing. Like, it looks good. It has this great vintage feel to it, but it's not something that's particularly enjoyable. But it did a good enough job. It, you know, when I compare it to something like the Muppet Family Christmas, it's clearly not as good.
That's not even
like,
I mean, we're doing like, hey, do you remember that like 41 win mediocre Celtics team? Like, there's probably some mediocre Celtics team with Paul Pierce before they got good. You're like, how does that team compare to the 1986 Celtics? You're like,
yep,
surprisingly,
I think you're thinking of the 2007 Celtics.
Well, So this is fascinating. We get to go on this. So the 1986 Celtics are the ones that are kind of everybody places as their epitome. And I think it is the most wins of their modern era. I'm sorry to Celtics fans. The 1950s, 1960s, even 1970s Celtics, they don't count. It was a much different league. The ABA was closer to the NBA than the 1960s NBA was to modern NBA.
Yeah.
And the three-point era, you know, which Larry Bird ushered in, the 1986 Celtics are often revered as the pinnacle.
Oh, yeah. When you look at who's on the team.
It's ridiculous. And then you got Bill Walton coming off the bench. But then the 2008 Celtics by, quote unquote, the numbers is the best, strongest team. And then, of course, they like destroyed the Lakers in the finals. That's even better.
It's Garnett. It's Ray Allen added to Paul Pierce with like a little bonus Rajon Rondo in there.
I mean, you can basically take the 86 or 2008. But yeah, the best Celtics team, I'm saying, compare some mediocre Paul Pierce season with like Paul Pierce getting an all-star, you're like, yeah, pretty good versus one of the best ever. It's like, the Muppet Family Christmas.
It's like when
Major
League Baseball has an all-star for every team, no matter what. Yeah. And you're just like, okay, but like, you know, poor McCutcheon coming from the Pirates and just being like, all right, well, I'm pretty good on a team that's going to get 40 wins.
Like baseball? Well, not that low, right? It would be like at least 60 or 70.
I mean, but you know what I mean. I'm not a stats nerd. That's you. This is, you know, I mean, I obviously have a lot of love for the property. I think the toys, I think the height of toy packaging is the Masters of the Universe 1982 to 1987 packaging. Like I genuinely feel that it's pure nostalgia for me. I think the toy designs are great. I think the character designs are great. I think the script writing is awful, but they were cranking out that was back in the day when you weren't getting 13 episode or even 22 episode seasons. These things were like 65 episode seasons.
Well, you mentioned J. Michael Straczynski or up top with like Spider-Man, where it's one of the most hated Spider-Man lines ever that he's the author on, and he's one of the greatest writers out there. And it's like, well, that was your imperative. And so like, even with this, right? Whoever's writing his Christmas special is on a deadline, and they're like, okay, we've got a really cool scene with, you know, the sorceress talking to Prince Adam and She-Ra or whatever. And they're like, listen, we're not selling her toy. We need you to like come up with a new like dog robot. They're like, what am I supposed to do with that? And they're like, figure it out. So it's kind of.
Well, it's also, you got to remember you're writing for kids. Like, you know, we're looking at this as men who are certainly not children, at least physically. So to sort of go through that and to look at it, and you're like, I get it. Like Earth kids, that gives them something to recognize it. You know, it ties it like. You know, kids watching that were like, oh, my God, He-Man's on Earth. Or, you know, like this show's taking place on Earth. Like, it could be real. Like, that's a genuine feeling some kids got, even though it's silly. As far as Christmas specials,
me wouldn't have hated this. I would have liked this as a kid. I didn't see it when I was younger. I would have been fine.
As far as mainstream Christmas specials go, this is pretty bottom of the barrel quality-wise. Character-wise, it's great. But quality-wise, when you look at the other stuff that was out there and the stuff that has lasted, when you look at like Frosty the Grinch, you know, Charlie Brown, a lot of stuff really is just written so much better than this.
I would agree that we're agreeing. We are
the beast monster
that even giving this all of the flack of the Christmas special just going to kids, whatever, it's like, yeah, but it was done better many years before. It was for
a lot of Christmas specials for kids
are toy commercials, right? I think, did you have a tweet about that? How like we're all just going to pretend that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is like historical lore and not just a cartoon, like just a commercial.
Just, it was what invented by like Macy's basically. Like the original Rudolph was like a book that was first released in like Macy's or something like that.
Yeah, it was 100% a commercial. It was a commercial initially. So yeah, we can get that.
Yeah, and even then, like Rudolph, I think that song is one of the worst songs in all of Christmas history. I gotta hate that song. The special is what it is. Still better than this.
Yes.
You know, like this is not great. And I feel comfortable being able to say that because I do love the property so much. And I don't pretend that it's good. I know that I loved it. And I hold that in my heart. And I make no qualms about how I view nostalgia. Nostalgia is something that reminds me of being young and not having bills. And the time in my life when, you know, receiving something like this made me feel great. And so I consider, you know, the reason I have this, you know, Hordak in a protective case, taking care of it and looking great is because this is art to me. This is the kind of stuff that reminds me that, you know, oh, I was so happy when I would get one of these and I would open it. It meant so much to me to be able to do that. And I stand by that. Like, I make no qualms about the fact of the quality of this stuff, but I do, you know, I have several animation cells from He-Man. Like,
well, I've had another metaphor in sports, sticking the sports realm. I've called it like the NBA 2K problem. So you look at a player like, say, Carmelo Anthony, who you know very well. You've walked a mile in his shoes.
Hey.
Anyway, callback. All right, listen to old episodes if you don't know what I was just talking about. Clearly, this is your first nerd, and you need to go listen to all the nerds to understand that. All right. So anyway, you look at a player like Carmelo Anthony, and you compare him to LeBron James. And physique-wise, they're very similar. But they are miles apart. LeBron James is without doubt the greatest basketball player that has ever played. Longevity, everything-wise, you can't take that away. And on a future show, Jeff, if we ever want to argue that, I'm happy to explain why. Carmelo Anthony is fine. At his peak, he was an okay player. He was never great. I spent a lot of my writing career talking about how he was overrated. I stand by that, but I mean, you know, overrated in the sense of you're one of the top 200 basketball players in the world, not one of the top 50, is a very minute nerd thing to do.
Yeah, it's a very pedantic way to view it.
But I could say if you put LeBron James's brain in Carmelo Anthony's body, like a Freaky Friday situation, or did NBA 2K, you're controlling both, they'd probably be about the same. And so when you look at, say, He-Man, a lot of us had the toys and could write our own narratives. And I think that's what happens is we're watching this show and you and I are both talking about like what could have been written, what could have been done better. And I think that's probably a lot of it is a lot of people grew up with He-Man, watched the show, and that was like their first introduction to a lot of these stupid archetypes, narratives, whatever, with reasonable writers, right? Like J. Michael Straczynski was writing some of it. Mm. You learn that.
He went to She-Ra and Real Ghostbusters, by the way.
Yeah. And there's so much good in his book, Becoming Superman and all of that.
A great book. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm saying you grow up and you played with the toys. And so you wrote it yourself. So I think a lot of the nostalgia also comes from people were able to tell their own stories. And like He-Man and She-Ra, if it were given three rights and were written well and the characters did this, could be a good show. And it's like, that is true, but that's not what you got. And even the great writers and people that worked on it, there was a lot of talented people. They were still constrained by a lot of shoestring budgets, quick deadlines, like just get it out stuff. So I mean, that's my two cents on it. I think a lot of people, the reason they give it the extra nostalgia is the action figures, because they were able to tell their own stories.
No, it was really great. And I think G.I. Joe did a real good job of that as well before they kind of fell down, is that you have that cartoon canon, but the canon in your head while you're playing it is so much more important, especially to the development of you as a kid. So I always view you know, it's funny because obviously the cartoon was designed to sell toys, and that really did work for me because, goddamn, you know, like I really did consume the shit out of these toys. I loved them. I was buying, you know, I was born in 1981. So like by the time I was old enough to play with these toys, they had been out for a year and a half or something like that. So I got in sort of in that second wave, famously with Clawful, you know, getting stabbed for this one toy on Easter morning by my brother. But being 3 years old, while and like sort of really being into this and consuming that and really going through there, and I did last until the end of the run. You know, like I stopped when it became the New Adventures of He-Man, but I was buying that last run, that 1987 run of, nice. You know, when you had your, you know, I had Mosquitor, I didn't get Gwildor or King Randor, but I, you know, Scareglow, I was still buying those. Even though they were on their way out, I loved that property. And it was the same thing with G.I. Joe. I stuck with G.I. Joe for a long time. I loved new characters in there. I was a perfect mark for these action figure companies. Mattel and Hasbro had my number, man. I was all about it.
I was going to say, I know it's actually come up on the Unpopular Opinion show with Adam Todd Brown, where he loved G.I. Joe. And then once they did like a second run, he was like, I am out. I'm not your mark. Screw you guys. It's great to hear the dichotomy when you're the opposite. You're like, wait, what? There are more toys? And I think I was just a little younger than you and I just moved on. My toy story, I'll do this and then we can do the wind down and stuff. My mom was visiting Boston, and she found like a used toy store because I was a little younger. So there were a bunch of used He-Man toys. And so she just came home with a bundle of like first or second run He-Man toys. It was like the coolest business trip ever, right? So mom gets home from a business trip and it's just like, here's 20 He-Man toys. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And like I said, then I think I moved on to video games and et cetera. So there's that. So Jeff, I've got, let's do a part of the show that kind of became the norm with these last two episodes. For the next show, keeping on the theme of television specials, I was thinking Ewoks, The Battle for Endor. It's something I grew up with. I loved it. It's a huge part of my childhood. I think, you know, if you at least had some familiar with, that's huge. And basically just the like, hey, when am I going to get a chance to do that again? And it fits with the theme because there's other stuff to go along with. If you have a counter idea, we could either debate those. And then if I think they're good enough head to head, we could do a poll. But it's also,
I mean, I have no room for debate on that. Ewoks Battle for Endor is something that I'd be down to watch. That's is that the one with Wilford Brimley in it?
Yes. He's in a lot of stuff. I mean, what, Cocoon's the most famous, right? He's like been,
I mean, The Thing is the thing that I think of.
He's been 100 forever, right?
Yeah.
It's one of those where like, if there were time to get them to do a podcast, but they're still finishing up Kevin Smith. And as I mentioned, the We Just Watched and hopefully in the future, I Just Watched from Jeff's are just always all sold out. So it's like, had to take the opportunity to actually get one of you to do a podcast on it. And you saying no debate, we'll do that. And then we'll discuss what series three, whatever we want to call it, Jeff, is next time, keeping the same thing of like, bring it to the table. And in this case, I'm just going to say Ewoks The Battle for Endor just won.
So I'm not going to disagree with you on that one. I think that would be a good one to discuss. So I'm in. I don't have a counter offer for that.
That's the good one. It's like, yeah. And I was saying some of the fun could be exactly what happened this time, which is we ended up doing both. And I mean, I think sadly it wasn't a case where I had a better alternative than He-Man. So if I'd had a better first offer, we probably might have dropped He-Man. But
anyway. I mean, by now it might be realized, but I actually made another, because I love Christmas specials and I have them a lot, that David Bell asked me to come up with a Christmas special to do what we just watched on as well. And I threw the Elf Christmas special at him.
So I think that will be out by the time this episode is out.
It should be out.
It is not out by the time. So good news for those of you in the future, if you haven't listened to it, The Muppet Family Christmas, listen to that instead of this. It's so much better. I would say, sorry, you're at the end, but you should have watched The Muppet Family Christmas instead of listening to us talk about this. But you should listen to us talk about The Muppet Family Christmas special instead of watching that. That's my sense, Jeff. That's the order I'll rank it. But it'll be out, I think, by the time this comes out. And let's start doing some plugs. So I'll say, Christmas Jeff, you're dressed for it. For those that don't see, if we don't do any video, Jeff is dressed for Christmas.
I have a Christmas sweater with a Masters of the Universe t-shirt on underneath here.
You knew the assignment. So, but Jeff, this month, you have done, I think, 4 podcasts on Christmas specials. You've officially announced it. You're going to do a podcast on Christmas music. You have done multiple podcasts on gift giving now. I mean,
oh yeah, the Unpopular Opinion that was released on Monday the 12th. Yeah.
And it's a fantastic episode. And for fans of the Unpopular Opinion Network, you're able to watch the live stream. If the world doesn't hate you, I got to watch about half of that. And then the internet gave out on you guys, like Zoom just crashed. But luckily,
the live stream. Yeah. Because I know, Adam released a video that was about 20 minutes long and then says, you know, you want more? Come on over, which I think is probably a good way to do it.
All right. But anything else you want to plug, Jeff?
I mean, if you're here, like if you're listening to this on patreon.com/Jeff May, thank you so much. I am going to assume I've teased it a little bit more, but I think I'm going to be shifting next year. So in 2023, I might shift the tiers a little bit, try to make things more accessible to some people, maybe change the producer tier, bump that one up a little bit, have a mid tier for something else. And then also, you know, offering that if hopefully maybe by now it's there, but nobody has called dibs on the January episode of so, you know, there is still one spot open for the January episode where I will record a podcast with you, unless it's been taken by now. This is the first time I think I've said out
loud.
And
I can easily cut it if it's been taken by then. So
but it has like a lot of people, you know, Alex came on, Alex Manofsky. I hope I said his name wrong. I'm sorry, dude. Came in, he wanted to do one show with me. So he signed up when it was open. And then as soon as November's payment structure went through, he went back to being a $10 tier member, which was pretty smart. So it is open. You know, as soon as you get one payment in, I owe you a show, no matter what. So If you want it, go get it. It's yours.
It's worth it. I'm gonna throw this out. Like, and the other thing I'll sell. We were talking this pre-show, Jeff, is one thing you do with that, and you do this already, right? Is you put this up on your tier, like on your feed, mm-hmm. on your RSS feeds. You also put it up on your Patreon feed, so your Patreon listeners hear it. You promote it on your social media, so it's like, if you think Jeff has cool friends, which is of course the free show. So hopefully you're not hearing this for free. So you'll be hearing this for free if Jeff gets 225 Patreon subscribers, which is just a question of when, not if. But if you're listening to this for free, Jeff Has Cool Friends is amazing. And of course, if your stuff goes up on your feed, your friends see it too. So it's like the Jeff co-produce a podcast with Jeff May is 100% worth it for everything it brings. The people that see it, the people that comment on it, your commenters are amazing. Have had some amazing back and forths, and actually, I'll use that to give I'll let you finish your plug, and I'll give a shout out, and then do my plugs.
Okay. If you want to hear more from me, you can obviously hear me on Tom and Jeff Watch Batman on the Gamefully Unemployed Network, as well as Unpopular Opinion and You Don't Even Like Sports, both on the Unpops Network. I think Adam and I are going to start a new season of You Don't Even Like Sports in January. We had a false start when we were going to do one person, and we decided that he wouldn't be good for it. And then we got thrown back through a lot of stuff.
Have you decided?
No, not yet. But we have a couple that we've been discussing. If you want to see me live, Mint on Card is the second Friday of every month. Blast from the Past in beautiful Magnolia in Burbank, California. Our next show, January 13th, I want to say, is our anniversary show. So
all right, well, speaking of Blast from the Past on what's the Magnolia Drive?
3117 West Magnolia Drive in beautiful Burbank, California.
We're going to have to do a first on the show, Jeff, which is a correction. On the Mega Man 2 episode of the show, we talked about Dan Telfer wearing a Target bought Mega Man 2 shirt. We would like to apologize. Dan bought that at Blast from the Past. He wants everyone to know, as per his name, as a cool friend of Jeff, he is cool. He would never buy a signature shirt at Target. He would buy it at a cool, awesome comic store that has amazing stand-ups like Jeff May stop by.
He also came by Mint on Card. Even if he's not performing, he comes to hang out, which is really, really cool. And you love that. And he's been boxing with me lately.
So as noticed, there should be no question about how cool Dan is. And we apologize for any false conception that he would buy something as lame as a Target bought shirt.
No.
Sorry, Dan. Thank you, everybody. All right. I'll finish myself up. I'm Dre Alvarez, found most places as Nerd Numbers. Biweekly, you can find me at the Box Score Geek Show, boxscoregeeks.com. I apologize, we did skip for Thanksgiving, but we'll be back next week. This is in the past, but Jeff, I did train really hard to win Metroid. The other thing I do biweekly, I also at twitch.tv/RicksterGT play my friend Landon, old school Nintendo. I am a nerd. I've spent the last 2 weeks training at Metroid, Jeff. I'm going to beat it in under an hour, hopefully live by the time this has come out.
Damn.
If I fail miserably, I'm just going to cut this. So then it'll
beat it in under an hour?
I can beat it in about 40 minutes. Anyway.
Damn.
that's been our show. I hope
that is wild.
I'll send you the recording, Jeff, when I'm done. All right. Thanks so much. Jeff, I'll say the bye this time. So everybody, thanks for stopping by. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. As noted, we'll be back next month with our final episode in Season 2, Ewoks, The Battle for Endor. I can't tell you how excited I am about that. We've got some fun ideas for Season 3. We might even have you vote on that if you are a subscriber at Patreon/Jeff May. Thanks so much. We'll see you then.